1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We welcome you to yet another edition of Feldis and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Dan, how are you today?
I'm good, Ken. How are you?
I am doing very, very well, and it is a pleasure to have three members right now of the Legislative Beer Caucus on the line. We have Michael Moffitt, Tim Lang, and Howard Pearl. Gentlemen, how are you today?
Great, Ken. This is Mike. Happy to be with you all on this big day.
Good morning, all. This is Howard, and also appreciative of the opportunity to come and chat with you guys again.
Well, it's great to have you along with us. Who's driving the bus today to the State House?
Well, I'm driving Mike and I, and Tim is, through the miracle of technology, is in his own car, and we've merged the calls. So Tim and I are driving.
Oh, my God. This is a technological, wow. Masterpiece,
we
I
pulled
guess.
It only on Feltus and Kale where you find something like this.
That's true. Wow. Wow. Two moving vehicles to the State House, because this is a big, big day under the Golden Dome in Concord. The New Hampshire legislature meeting for the final time this session today. A lot on the line as the proposed state budget goes up for a vote. And Mike, we'll start with you. What do you like about this budget?
I like a lot about it. I like most of it. It cuts taxes. Of course, it's something that our team likes. It sends more money back to the towns to cut property taxes. And also, it increases funding on many line items. So it cuts taxes, increases funding. It's a winner, in my view.
Howard, what about yourself?
Well, I would concur with all of the things that Mike said, and there's a lot of policy issues that are in there. It's going to be a close vote. It'll be really interesting to see how this shakes down. The numbers are tight, but I'm confident going in that the team will unite and we'll pass a good budget.
Tim, any thoughts?
No, again, I think Howard's right. It's going to be a close vote. I think House Bill 1, which is the actual appropriations of monies, will pass pretty easily. But the House Bill 2 is under some scrutiny. There's some good things in House Bill 2. I like the $100 million in direct property tax relief under the SWEP tax, the statewide education property tax, which everyone will see a reduction in that line item on their tax bill because of this budget passing. So, that makes me happy. The increase in the division of the rooms and meals tax. Right now, the state usually... gives the towns about 20%. That number, I think, is going up between 30 and 40% now. So we'll see a significant increase in the revenues going back to towns for that tax that's raised statewide in terms of meals tax. So, yeah, there's a lot of great things in that budget.
We know it's going to be a close vote. I think everybody agrees to that. We know you're members of the Beer Caucus, but what about the Freedom Caucus? What impact is the Freedom Caucus going to have on the vote today?
Well, this is Mike starting off with that answer, Ken. And the Freedom Caucus was not on board, generally speaking, and that's pretty common knowledge. The members of that caucus had multiple concerns with different aspects of the bill package, the policy package. And the problems that many of them and others had with the way this has come forward is that from the state Senate, Dan is familiar with this process, the omnibus bill process. Many things were tied into the budget that were policy items that were very unpalatable to some of the folks in the Freedom Caucus. But there has been a lot of discussion and arm twisting, maybe, and lobbying, or whatever you want to call it. And, as we were looking at the numbers today, it's going to be very, very, very close. I think
we might make it. Guys, the House Bill 417 passed by a vote of 328, I believe, in the House. Bipartisan vote to reform emergency powers of the governor. I have long advocated on the legislature reasserting itself. You know, it doesn't matter who's in the corner office, Republican, Democrat, what their name is, Governor Sununu, Governor Feltes, Governor whoever, that person shouldn't have this much power, period. It's inconsistent with democracy and our Constitution, in my view. I've been consistent about that all the way through. Might be the only candidate for governor pledging to relinquish powers. And HB 417 passed with 328 votes. Why is that so difficult? I think that's a baseline reform to just get into the budget. Why is the governor, why is the Senate not going along with that?
Sure, I can take that one. This is Representative Wang. So I think in concept everyone likes 417, but in the process, legislative process, the question got flipped. Everyone likes the idea that the legislature will reestablish and vote on emergency powers and extended it to even include emergency executive orders so that previously we could only do end the state of emergency. Now we can leave the state of emergency in place, but if we don't like a particular direct executive order, the legislature gets veto power over an executive order after 90 days. Problem I think the Freedom Caucus has is that the question was inverted, and instead of the legislature voting to continue the state of emergency, if the legislature doesn't come out with a vote, then it automatically continues. They wanted it so that we must vote to continue, and if we don't vote to continue, it automatically ends. And that's been a sticking point for everybody.
Well, I think one of the things that's interesting about this, I mean, the notion that there could be an up or down vote, obviously, in the Senate, the resolutions have to come in by 2/3 vote. They could just change the rule to do that. But on emergency orders, as you mentioned, Representative Lang, the reality, I think, though, the way the New Hampshire Superior Court judge analyzed the existing statute is that you can do a concurrent resolution that strips some of this stuff and keeps some of the other things that our governor is doing. So at least in my view, anyways, it doesn't seem to be real reform. The other thing that seems to be something that's being debated is something, as you guys know, is I champion paid family medical leave insurance. Any insurance plan sometimes is called by some people, quote unquote, an income tax. How is the family leave provisions put in HB2 not a quote unquote income tax?
Well, real quick, again, this is Mike. I'm sure Howard and Till have some points to make, but this too, FML has been a big sticking point for a lot of folks. The version, and I know Senator Feltes, this is a pet project of his and very important to him last time around. This version of FML is focused on state employees, and so we're talking about 11,000 folks, I think, maybe. So it's not a huge number of people, and it also involves private insurance components, where the private insurance companies would end up absorbing some of the risk. But I know Howard and Tim have thoughts on this as well.
I'll jump in for a minute. I think one of the things that's important to me here is it's an opt-in program, not an opt-out. I think that's real important to... I don't love the idea, but as you both know, especially you, Senator, the whole process of putting a budget together sometimes requires you to accept there's some things in there that aren't exactly the way you want it. And this is one. It's not my favorite part of the budget. I will accept it, and I will vote for the budget, and I'll support it. I think Speaker Packard and Leader Osborne have done a wonderful job in getting the points out there and having the necessary conversations within our caucus to bring people on board, accepting that many don't like this part of it, the FML part. But we'll deal with it. We'll live with it. And if we feel as a legislature next year that there's some parts that we need to modify on it, we've got the opportunity to do that as an active date has been pushed out to 23, if I remember correctly. So it gives us a chance to look at it again and see if there's some changes we need to make.
Folks on this call, myself included, have worked together on issues. You know, Representative Pearl and I have worked together on a number of issues. And I guess one of the questions that people have out there is why wasn't there an effort? Now, budgets tend to be partisan, it's just the way it is, and contentious. But sometimes there's bipartisan agreement on a budget. Why wasn't there an effort to work with, say, 40 or 50 Democrats and try to get to yes that way?
So, Dan, I'll take that as Representative Link. So, again, I think you hit the nail, I mean, on the head. That the bottom line is budgets tend to be contentious. You know, we, as Republicans, we tend to look at things in terms of taxes and keeping money in people's pockets. You know, in the case of FMLI, Howard hit the nail on the head. For me, I was opposed to FMLI while it was an opt-out, not an opt-in. The opt-out had some horrendous processes to try to opt out, get notarized letters and everything else as an employee. So when it was first proposed, I was against it. I do think there's some legacy stuff of history like that that people may not understand. The new bill's a little bit different and done differently. As Howard said, it's private insurance. It's an opt-in. An employee has to choose to. It allows collective bargaining agreements to become into play and allow them to negotiate FMLI into it. So, but again, I think there's some history in the background of FMLI and the way it was proposed back in the day. I think it was SB2 back in the day where the opt-out procedures were horrendous. It was mandatory, basically, for all employers, and it was kind of ugly. And Republicans remember that, and I don't know that they've looked into it. So the name itself just has a cloud hanging over it. On the budget itself, again, it's about policies, right? So I'm very happy that we're returning money to taxpayers through the SWEP tax, increased rooms and meals tax, that we increased monies to nursing homes. But on that same side, we turn around and we reduce taxes on businesses, whether it's the reduction in the rooms and meals tax by a half a point, whether it's the reduction in the business enterprise tax and the business profits tax. We emphasize letting New Hampshire citizens keep money in their pocket that they earned. And I'm not so sure that the other side thinks that that's a priority.
We have a rare opportunity. Three founding members of the Beer Caucus with us on Feldis and Kale. Mike Moffitt, Tim Lang, and Howard Pearl. We have to take a very quick break, and we will resume our conversation with these gentlemen right after these words. 103.9 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Feldis and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 103.9 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Feldis and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. By the magic of modern-day communication, we have three members of the Beer Caucus with us today on their way right now to the State House to vote on the budget for the next 2 years. Mike Moffitt with us, Tim Lang, Howard Pearl, what about the school voucher plan? We've heard a lot about that. I'd like to get your thoughts on it. We'll start with Mike.
Yeah, sure, Ken. I am on Education Committee. And so that so-called voucher plan, or the Education Freedom Account plan, came to my committee. And honestly, I had some problems with aspects of it. In theory, I certainly support helping lower-income families with unique circumstances to have some choices that more affluent families have. But we retained it in the House committee that never gets to the floor because we had issues with it. Now, the Senate version, SB 130, is part of the big budget bill, and so that is something that we will have to vote for or against. It's part of the big budget bill. So, I support the concept of school choice. I think there needs to be some fine-tuning to it, which can happen. But it will become a fait accompli if the budget passes. By the way, we're not going to the State House per se. The State House, so to speak, is
right.
Going to be at the Bedford Sportsplex.
Yep.
Yeah,
I forgot about that aspect of it, but you're right. And so how is that going? How does that change things at all?
Well, it's certainly a different venue than being in the State House. I mean, I all of us want to get back there, and hopefully this will be our last time in Bedford as we are transitioning out of the COVID requirements and whatnot, and getting all those things ironed out. But I mean, you've both been into the State House. There's something special about being in Reps Hall and just the history and all that's there associated with it. That kind of gets lost when we're down here in the vast space that we're in. And, I mean, honestly, we can't see the other end of the room, hardly. You don't even know the know, it just, it's a separation that I don't enjoy. I'm very much a people person, and I believe we do our best work when we're all in the room together and can have those face-to-face conversations.
Tim and Howard, and any thoughts about the school voucher program?
Sure, I'll jump in, Howard.
Go ahead, Tim.
So again, I believe that every education is different. So I spent years on the school board and used on the school budget committee. So, you know, not every education system works for every child. So allowing options for families is huge. I worked with Greg Hill, passed the scholarship program a while back that allowed for some scholarships to underprivileged kids to be able to get them out of a traditional school if it's not working for them for whatever reason and get them into a different school. And I think this does the same thing. Again, it doesn't trap children into a school system that doesn't work for them because of their zip code. You know, a lot of people make hay of the fact that this will take money from public sector and put it into the private sector, but that's not exactly true as well. You could go from the public sector to the public sector. If I'm in my school district, Winnesquam School District, and my child doesn't work in that school for some reason, I could take this program and send my kid to Concord School System and use that EFA account to be able to send my child there as well. So I think it's huge. They did put some caps on it. So there's, I think it's 375% of the poverty level before you qualify. You have to be under that mark. So it is earmarked towards poor populations that could potentially be trapped into schools that aren't working for their child education. So I'm in favor of the concept of the program. I think that it's a great move to allow the best education for the children in New Hampshire and let it be unique to that child.
Well, one of the criticisms has been, as you probably have heard, is that benchmark of, I think it's 350% or maybe it's 375, federal poverty guidelines. That's an initial threshold, and it's not an ongoing kind of test. Like any public benefit, having been served as a legal aid attorney, they're ongoing. Those income tests are ongoing. And so there's a question and a concern and a criticism, interested in your response, about accountability and subject to potential waste, fraud, and abuse if someone qualifies initially but then is way over the income threshold because there is no further testing down the road.
Go ahead. No, so I was going to say, I shared those concerns, but I do know there were some things put in. I can't remember the name of the organization that is going to be managing the if it passes that aspect of it, but they do have reporting requirements. We put them in back my first term, or first or second term, when I was on Ways and Means. We put some conditions on the reporting requirements for the scholarships, so those same requirements are on the voucher program, that they prove certain things. I agree with you on the 375% going ongoing, but I know, again, in a lot of cases we're talking about child's education and moving a child from one school to another school just because their parents happen to got a better job could be problematic. So I think that there's probably going to be some tweaking in that program to deal with some of that stuff, that as people move into a different economic status, if that happens, then that they may pick up some of the load on some of the cost, and that state relieves some of that cost. But again, I do think that, and Dan, you know this, that almost every time we put a policy within a few years, someone's got to tweak to it to make it a little bit better.
Yeah.
And so I anticipate that's going to happen with this program, that we'll get it established with the policy working, and then we'll see what the holes are and the gaps are and the problems are, and we'll correct that as the years go along.
On a much, much lighter note, fellas, we've asked this of Representative Moffitt last time he was on as a member of the Beer Caucus, but we'll ask Howard and Tim, what's your favorite beer?
Anything local that ends with IPA.
That's a good answer.
How about you, Tim?
So right now I've been drinking the Brown Owl over at Northwoods Brewery over there. Really nice beer and really good subtle beer. Nice sipping beer for at night when I'm sitting in my hot tub.
There you go. So you guys know what happens. What if the budget fails? What if it doesn't pass? What happens then?
Well, likely what will have to happen is the legislature will have to suspend rules and put in, a continuing resolution to keep funding at current levels, and we'll have to go back to the negotiation table and see what we can do.
I mean, it's happened. Yeah, it's happened before. I'm sure it'll happen again.
Well, it happened the last two budgets. Last two budgets didn't pass on the first go around. They're vetoed by Governor Sununu and vetoed by Governor Hassan. So, continuing resolution and ongoing. One of the things, fellas, that's been out there is talking about the spending levels. There's this notion that there's a 3% reduction in spending, and citing the $171 and change million dollars. However, that doesn't reflect the fact that $185 million, I think Representative Lang mentioned Meals and Rooms earlier, $185 million of Meals and Rooms have been moved off budget into restricted fund and are not part of that calculation. Is that an honest presentation of what is going on in the budget to say there's a spending reduction when the budget has moved $185 million out?
So again,
go ahead, Tim.
Yep. So Dan, again, I would say that I if I'm not mistaken, when they moved it out, they also moved it into this year's budget. If I'm not mistaken, didn't they?
Well, they moved it into they moved it into a restricted. It happened at the committee conference. They moved it into a restricted fund, so it's not part of. When people say the general fund has a spending reduction of $171 million, it's not calculating that $185 million that came in or is projected to come in from Meals and Rooms. So technically, there's a spending increase. So it's just one of those things that happens in the budget process. But I think some people are out there. I'm not saying you guys are, but some people are out there forcefully saying there's a spending reduction and an effort to pitch the budget. And I'm just wondering if you think that's an accurate or honest way to pitch the budget.
Well, I would say this, Dan, as you've just kind of answered your own question here. There's a lot of things and calculations and accounting procedures that go into the budget and make it really difficult to go out and make a fair representation that people would understand. And I will not lie to you, some of this is, there's areas of that is difficult for me to even comprehend and understand. To me, I like to look at an aggregate number of everything that's going through, but this pass through federal dollars, highway funds, and as you well know, it gets pretty complicated. So I would say that I'm going to represent the budget as a collaborative effort of a lot of folks that have put a lot of time into it, and it's a good solid budget that meets many of the platform planks that align with my beliefs and my ideals. And for those reasons, I will happily push the green button and vote for this today.
In augmenting the state budget that we're talking about, keep in mind there is also a lot of federal money that is COVID-related that is part of the mix, too. That's not part of our budget, but is also augmenting the budget because communities all over the state are getting various amounts of federal money. So that is a factor in the overall financial picture that, you know, we should not overlook either.
Well, for me, Dan, I'll just tell you, it's politics. I don't particularly like it. I've never phrased the budget the way you just said. But I look at the policies of how it's said that are in the budget that I agree with and that I like, and the ones I don't like, I try to get mitigated during the process and or out eliminated if we can. But again, I look at this budget as an overall as a win. I'm going to be like Howard. I'm pushing the green button today to pass this budget, both HB1 and HB2, the policy trailer bill, because I think on the whole, on its face, it's really great for New Hampshire citizens.
Well, Representative Lang, I must say I checked my DraftKings today. There was no question on it about the New Hampshire state budget. I was kind of disappointed about that. So.
We do call it. Pretty sure that the Hampshire politics is a blood sport, but I don't think I can get it over in the DraftKings sports betting belt.
We'll see how close it is today. Maybe they'll consider adding it next time.
Maybe next time.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, we appreciate you being with us. Mike Moffitt, I want to commend you on your great piece on historic Holman Stadium, the cover story in this most recent edition of the Weir's Times. So great piece, Mike.
Well, thank you, Ken. We actually went to a luxury suite down there that some former reps had. And so, the Beer Caucus was there at the historic Holman Stadium. Yes, I was happy to write about it. That really is maybe the place where baseball was truly integrated in 1946, a year before Jackie Robinson came to the Brooklyn Dodgers. So I'm glad you saw that. And Where's Times, great little newspaper.
Oh, it is, no doubt about it. So, gentlemen, thank you for pulling off this technological marvel today on Feldis and Kale. Members of the Beer Caucus, Lieutenant Colonel Mike Moffitt, Tim Lang, and Howard Pearl, we appreciate it very much.
Thanks, guys. Be well.
Well, thank you. Always appreciate the opportunity. And you guys take care of yourself. And, hey, stay tuned. We'll see. It's going to be an exciting day for us.
No doubt. No doubt. Thanks, guys. Safe travels.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. As they head to Bedford for the vote today. And this is Feldis and Kale at 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Feldis and Kale is proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Feldis and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Speaking of which, right now on the line, we have the executive director of Granite State Dairy Promotion, Amy Hall. Amy, how are you today?
I am doing wonderful. How are you today?
We are doing great. And, you know, Dan, Amy did a terrific job last week filling your shoes, sitting right at that microphone where you are right now. And Amy, you are in great form as always.
Oh, I think you can. I am no Dan Feldis. I will tell you that much for sure.
If I had a nickel for every time.
No, but thank you, Dan. It was an honor to sit in your seat and to be alongside of Ken again. It felt like the good old days, didn't it, Ken?
It did. Old-time radio.
Yes.
As it were. But, Amy, it's great to have you along with us, as always. And we know that the ice cream trail is very much underway as we get ready for a big ice cream 4th of July weekend in the not-too-distant future. But any feedback as to how it's going thus far?
I mean, all the feedback I get is always 100% positive.
Sure.
In terms of the ice cream trail. Why wouldn't it be, right? You know, ice cream is a summer staple. It's very, you know, what I find interesting is that food is very emotional for people. You know, so in the winter, you have your chowders and your macaroni and cheeses, you know, and it makes you feel that warmth and that comfort when the air is freezing. You know, and then on the other spectrum, you have ice cream, which is sort of that sign of, you know, sunshine and freedom and outdoors. And of course, people eat, you know, both ends of the spectrum, regardless of time of year. But it really is a very emotional thing when you sit down and you eat food. And I'm not sure a lot of people realize that, but that's also part of the fun of a food trail, regardless of what it is. You know, there's bourbon trails down in Kentucky. We have our ice cream trail. The Department of Agriculture has their wine and cheese trail.
Right.
So there's just something about food that brings us all together, and I think that's a really terrific thing.
No, it is, and, you know, especially when you have one of the passports, the ice cream trail passports, 42 ice cream stands, and it says on the cover right here, full of local flavor and fun. And, you know, if you follow the trail, if you hit, you know, even if you don't hit all 42, even if you go to, you know, 20, 25, whatever it might be, you're going to see something, some aspect of this state that you probably have never seen before. And I think that's one of the great parts about it, along with the ice cream.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, Ken. And our owners are so excited, our shop owners, they love to be a part of this. You know, if you follow us on Instagram, and I hope people are, we're at NH Dairy on Instagram, trying really hard to build our following. That tends to be where a lot of people's attention are these days in terms of social media. And what I love is that, you know, I'm sure you've read the map, Ken and Dan, you're out there trying to conquer the trail yourself, is that people are actually hashtagging New Hampshire Ice Cream Trail and New Hampshire Dairy And one of my favorite things is following their adventures across the state. You know, today I'm on stop 8. I'm in North Conway today. Today I drove all the way up to Pittsburgh, you know, and visited Moose Alley Cones. You know, and they put the flavor of their ice cream there. And that's really good for two things. You know, it brings attention to dairy farmers, but it pulls other people to those locations. Perhaps you're not doing the trail map at all, which you should be. Use it as a guide, even if you don't want to hit all 42 shops. But, you know, get out there and explore the state. And I'm just really pleased with the happiness and joy I see out there. There's one gentleman right now. And what I love about what he's doing, it's very kind of similar to you, Ken and Dan, is that he's combining the ice cream trail with physical activities. So, you know, the Belknap Mountain Series trail running that they did last week, it was a large race with a great turnout. You know, after these races, he goes out and, you know, hits a couple ice cream stops after his race. You know, and he's done this in the North Country. Again, he was in Belknap County. I don't know where he's off to next, but I just love the idea that, yes, you can enjoy food, but you can also do so and be happy and healthy. So everybody has a different story. And again, I think it all just ties back to that emotion of it. So it's fun for me. It's fun for everybody. Ice Cream Trail certainly brings out all different aspects of people.
No, it really does, Amy. No question.
Yeah, and Amy, you're right. I mean, Ken and I are trying to combine, you know, physical activity with the ice cream trail. In fact, Ken is going to jog the entire trail.
Oh, yeah. Thanks,
Ken,
for letting me know.
We will be your official sponsor for life. If you're able to accomplish that.
You're going
to
need a lot of chocolate milk.
Good luck. Yeah, a lot of chocolate milk. Yes, I'll need to be energized and refreshed and renewed and all that stuff.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, and the fact here, and we've discussed it before, is that, you know, the dairy industry touches billions of people around the world. And this is just one very small New Hampshire initiative. You know, it can't be necessarily accurately addressed from single perspectives. So, you know, when you step back and you take a bird's eye view of this, you realize just how important dairy is. You know, we've talked about the local, we've talked about supporting small business and educating people about dairy. But when you really sit down and think about it, you know, dairy feeds billions of people around the world in terms of essential nutrition. It encompasses, you know, products and experience and health, you know, specifically in countries who are dealing with a significant amount of malnourished children or underfed children. And without dairy, without our dairy supply, you know, this would become a real issue, that's for sure. So again, you know, perspective in all of this is extremely powerful. And we're just proud to be as tiny as we are. We are not 6 billion strong, that's for sure. But here in New Hampshire, our dairy farmers sure are proud to be a part of such a wonderful story.
Wonderful dairy farmers, great for the local economy, great for tourism, agritourism, and just a great trail and a great setup. So thank you for all you're doing, Amy, and all of it.
No, thank you, Dan. Thank you, Ken, for all of your support. And, you know, it sure is encouraging because, you know, it's easy to get involved in headlines. You know, you read something bad or, you know, something untrue, and dairy does tend to be a target for one reason or another. And, again, I think that all comes back to perspective. You can't see things through just one lens. And, you know, out in the everyday world, when I am out and about at the finish line of Millennium Running Races or at high school championship games or on the air with, you know, kind men like you and Ken, you know, it really fills my heart, and it does as well for our dairy producers. So thank you. It's not about what I do by any means. It's all about what they do and their commitment to community, their 365-day-a-year commitment to feed all of us and to make sure we have healthy nutrition available to us and on our plates every single day.
No doubt about that. And even if you don't do you know, all the stops on the ice cream trail, although a lot of people do, you know, even if you, you know, do a handful, pick up the passport, because there's all kinds of great stuff in the passport. You know, it's not just getting the stamps at the ice cream stands and the dairy farms, but there are great facts. Here's one that I came across, all right, for all the women that listen to us. And they're, you know, because Dan's on this show, there are lots of women that listen to this show. Our demographics are very high in the female category because of Dan Feldes.
Oh, my goodness.
Women who eat at least three servings. Now, this would surprise a lot of people, so listen carefully. Women who eat at least three servings of dairy foods each day are 80% less likely to be obese than those who don't.
Exactly. Now, three servings of ice cream a day doesn't necessarily
apply. It said dairy foods, not necessarily ice cream. Yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, a lot of that, everything that you're going to read in there is fact-based. And, you know, that's just based upon years and years, clearly, of studies by nutritional agencies, professional PhDs who do these studies. You know, we talked to Pete last week. He studies cows. We have people at the same caliber and capacity to study nutrition. You know, and for years and years and years, the studies just keep coming out about the benefits. And that's just one of them. You know, let's say it's 3 8-ounce glasses of milk every day. Mm-hmm. The nutrition keeps you fuller longer. It is not empty calories. So it stands to reason that that glass of milk, which is full of protein, it has some of those carbohydrates, it has the essential things that you need to survive as a human being, your body responds positively to that. And as a result, it will function positively. It will keep some of that weight off. So there's just, that's just one benefit. And then you think about 8 ounces of milk. That's not a lot. That's a very small amount. So, you know, people can feel definitely good that incorporating dairy into their diet has so many positive aspects to it.
And Ken mentioned some of the factoids that are in there, but in addition to that, if you do complete the trail, all 42 stops, Amy, what happens?
Well, if you complete the trail, you get a sweatshirt. You get the Eat Like a Cow sweatshirt. So that's always fun for people, because once you complete the trail, it's sweatshirt season, right? So people go around. The fun part is they post their holiday pictures wearing their sweatshirts when families complete the trail. And if you are, everyone gets a sweatshirt. Let me just leave it at that. But then everybody who does complete the trail gets put into a grand prize drawing. And then if you are drawn from that as our grand prize winner, you win a basket full of New Hampshire made goodies, from crafts to food, you know, to beauty products, you name it, local. And then a $200 Amazon gift card. And people just, you know, it's something to go after. A lot of people aren't after the prize, but of course, if they get pulled as the grand prize winner, they're super excited. And there's sort of a twist this year. And it came about after we printed the map. I was talking with our sponsored Prospect Acres obstacle course team up in Franklin. And I said, hey guys, would you be willing, if the ice cream trail winner wants to participate, to let them go through the obstacle course with you guys a few times? And they said, absolutely, we're in. So see, we're tying health and fitness into this as well.
Nice. And of course, we know where that drawing is going to take place for the winner of the ice cream trail. We know where it's going to take place.
Absolutely right. And I think the same day of the drawing, right here on WKXL, is the final weigh-in day. And we'll see where you and Dan stand on the weight loss challenge.
There you go. You have our weights. I know you're keeping track of that, Amy. I know you are. We have to take a quick break. Amy Hall is with us, Executive Director of Granite State Dairy Promotion. There are proud sponsors here of Feldes and Kale on 103.9 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Heading down the home stretch of Feldes and Kale here at 103.9 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. We are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmer. I am going to hit, I will say this today, a little bit later on today, I'm going to hit one of the stops along the ice cream trail. It's either going to be Memories Ice Cream in Kingston or Lucky's Chewies Candies and Creamery in Dover. It's going to be one of those two because I am heading out today to Hampton Beach.
Oh, there you go.
To see the sandcastles.
Good.
That the great sandcastle competition was held this past weekend, and the sandcastles and the, I say sandcastles, that's kind of a misnomer. I mean, these are just incredible works of art that have been done by, 12 to 14 sand crafters or whatever they call themselves. A lot of them from the maritime provinces of Canada. I think that's where the winner came from this year. But if you haven't seen that display in person at Hampton Beach, it's really something to behold. Have you ever been out there, Amy?
You know, I haven't, Ken, because traditionally the UNH Open Barn falls right around this time, too. Unfortunately, UNH has, limited numbers of people that can come through for tours. But I have seen photos from my friends on Facebook, and they are absolutely jaw-dropping. You know, you picture, sandcastle competitions. And, in my brain, I picture what I used to make at 5 years old. You know, you got the moat that comes in and that,
And the kind I still make.
Exactly. So, they are absolutely gorgeous talent beyond belief.
It is beyond belief. It really and truly is. Have you been out there, Dan?
I have. Actually, we're out there in Hampton Beach, a little family get together. They were just starting to sculpt these sand structures and got to see the process. They got these huge buckets of water next to them. They got all these tools.
Yeah.
It was really interesting to watch. I still don't, it's just watching it. I still don't know how they do it, but it's something. It really is neat.
It really is. And, that's it. I think they're only going to be up through this weekend. Under the lights, if you, can't make it out during the day and the crowds are a little bit less at night at Hampton Beach. So if you want to get out there at night and see them under the lights, they are there 24 hours a day, but I believe only through this weekend. And Amy, I noticed on your Facebook page, good to see that the Cornish Fair is coming back. And I understand they also have a new dairy barn out there for this year.
Absolutely. And John Porter, actually, who designed the barn and spearheaded it with his wife, and Steve Taylor, who you may all be familiar with, former Commissioner of Agriculture. When I very first started, he was there. He was also involved in this. And thanks to an anonymous donor, they were able to build what has been very much needed for years upon years as an actual enclosed structure, not a tent, for our livestock exhibitors and our dairy producers who do take time. This is their vacation. They go to the fair, they show their cows. They love their animals and they love for the public to see it. So John Porter sits on the board of directors for Granite State Dairy Promotion. So we had a front row kind of seat to all of this happening and sort of had to keep our lips zipped for a while. But thank you for bringing that up. Yes, it's a very exciting adventure for them. It has been very much needed and a perfect example of how when a small community needs something, they truly are within their heart and soul ready, willing, and able to work together to get it done.
Especially in New Hampshire.
That is true. Yeah.
Amen, Dan. Very amen true. To that.
And the Cornish Fair, and you want to talk about a real country fair, that's one of them. And August 20th through the 22nd at the fairgrounds in Cornish, check out the new dairy barn and everything else that great fair has to offer. So, Amy, that has to wrap it up for today's proceedings, and I'll be hitting the trail after this broadcast. Dan, thank you.
Thank you, Amy.
And thanks as always to Granite State Dairy Promotion, our sponsors here on Feldes and Kale at 103.9 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. feltusandkale.com, and we will see you next time for another edition of Feltus and Kale.